afternoon.
We're going to call a meeting to order. Is Representative Slocum here? Heck yeah, we're good to go. All right. Well, Representative Zeller's got here quite early and reviewed all of the minutes of the April 17th meeting. He made some punctuation and grammar changes. And with that, he moves the minutes. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say
no.
None. That motion carries. I'm not counting that one no vote. House File 128, Representative Slocum is here. She moves that House File 128 be recommended pass and referred to the General Register.
Thank you.
Representative Slocum, it's my understanding there are no amendments and you're ready to roll. To your bill. Thank you, Representative Slocum. That was a fine job. Are there any questions from members of the committee?
You know.
That's fires. They all agreed to not agree, so...
And quite frankly, folks, in light of the time and the fact that both sides have done perhaps the most phenomenal job I've ever seen of lobbying all of the individual members, I would be shocked if members on this committee are not thoroughly familiar with the issues on either side and the points being made by each side of the argument. So with that, I would ask that Representative Slocum present the bill, and then if the testifiers could stay as brief as possible, that would be appreciated. Representative Slocum to House File 128, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Did you move this bill to go then, I believe, to the floor from here?
It's going to the General Register.
Okay.
If it passes.
This bill is about organized trash hauling for metropolitan areas, municipalities, cities, or counties. They can use this. And what we've had a process before. It's quite a long and arduous process for a municipality to elect to do the organized hauling. And what this process does is it just changes it somewhat. It streamlines it. It still allows for a public input. And I have Mr. Johnson from League of Cities who will explain the bill in more depth, quickly.
Welcome.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Craig Johnson with the League of Minnesota Cities, and I think I can be very brief on this. What this bill does is takes a process that already exists in state law, which is the ability for a city or township to decide that they want to structure and put out for bid how the garbage will be collected in their community. There's currently a six-month process, 90 days of mandatory planning with current licensed haulers and the community, 90 days of negotiation with current licensed haulers from the community. At the end of that, you can look at doing organized waste collection either with those licensed haulers or looking at another option. What we're doing is changing the process so that the negotiation with the existing local haulers from the community now happens right away, the first 60 days. And at the end of that 60 days, the community can look at the proposal put forward by the existing haulers to make sure that they have a shot to keep their business in the community as the organized collection bid is put forward. If it works for the community, they can accept it. If they would like to look at other options, they can form a committee and look at other options. That's really the main change. The only other change from current law, members, is that it does put a time limit on that initial contract if a city chooses to go with that option from the existing local haulers of 3 to 7 years. It says that that first contract would have to be up for a bid in no less than 3 and no more than 7 years. I'd be happy to answer any questions members have. That really is the main changes made in this bill.
Okay, thank you. There's no questions at this point, so thank you for your testimony. Next up, we've got Mike Berkopek and Mark Stoltman. Gentlemen, if you could join us and just identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Hello, Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Mike Berkopek. I'm with Ace Solid Waste. And I will keep my comments brief. As the chairman mentioned, I know that a lot of people have been made familiar with this situation. Just as a quick for background, obviously I work for Ace Solid Waste. We're a local independent up in Ramsey, Minnesota. Mark Stoltzman's here from Randy's Environmental. Brett Anderson from Dick's Sanitation in Lakeville is out in the audience. Willie Tennis from Tennis Sanitation is in the audience. These folks have obviously been in support of this bill, along with Walters Recycling and Refuse, West Central Sanitation out of Wilmer, Jeans Disposal, Suburban Waste in Edina, and Elite Disposal down in Belle Plaine, Jordan area. Obviously, we are Minnesota-based local haulers, and we've been working hard on this issue with all the various members. I am also the chairman of the Minnesota chapter of the National Solid Waste Management Association, and I believe you may have received a letter that our association does support House File 128 as it sits today. By way of background, there were three of our hauling members who weren't in agreement with us on that, but the association still supports the amendment. I guess the only thing I want to mention is that this is a, from our perspective, this is a big compromise. There's been a lot of talk, I think you've heard it, about different specifics of the language. And overall, this is an opportunity to recognize that the way people want to buy garbage service may be changing, and this is an opportunity to respect those haulers who are currently in those communities and provide a transition to a situation where it used to be a hauler purchasing, a resident purchasing service directly from a hauler to a situation where there's some government involvement. So I'm not going to get into any of the specifics unless there's any questions, but I would say that, as I mentioned earlier, the Minnesota haulers, local Minnesota haulers, are in favor of this, and we would appreciate, especially Section 5, that it gets passed through this committee. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Birkbeck. Mr. Stoltman.
Good evening, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm here today also to support Representative Slocum's bill, House File 128, as amended. And my name, again, Mark Stoltman. I work for Randy's Environmental Services. We're a family-run Minnesota business based in Delano with locations in Rogers and in Burnsville. You know, from the perspective of a family-run business, this bill is very important to us because it allows us to move forward and really protect some of the investments we've made over the course of time to try and meet the goals of the state and the demands that our customers have of us. In the past 8 years, we've developed an organics program, built an MSW processing facility, built a single-stream recycling facility, have a document destruction division, and added a compressed natural gas facility. All of those things were done in order to try and evolve our company and meet the state's goals, provide the best service possible, and all of those are done with the customer base that we have now. The banks give us our loans on that customer base, and in order to pay for those investments and move forward with growing our company, competing in a very highly regulated business, it's important for us to have the ability to negotiate in advance of organized collection to try and protect the business that we've worked for 30 or 40 years to grow. And in this particular situation, this bill allows us that opportunity. We feel strongly that the community would support the companies that are currently licensed in their area that have provided good service, and for no other reason than organized collection. We don't feel they should be put out of business, frankly. The goals of this bill were to reduce truck traffic, were to improve safety, and were to adjust and control pricing. This bill meets all those standards, and we feel, as written, should be supported by this group. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Stoltman. Next up, we have Mr. Donnelly and Mr. Copeland. If you could join us. And now that we have everybody, by the way, in the room, I just want to say thank you on behalf of all of us sitting up here at the big table. Thank you to everyone for your patience. This meeting obviously was supposed to happen at 4 this afternoon, and we spent a little bit more time on the floor than that. So thank you for sticking around. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, my name is Julie Ketchum. I'm the Director of Government Affairs for Waste Management, and with me is Paul Copeland. He's our Area Sales Director. I'd first like to thank members of the committee, the author, and the chair for giving your consideration all of the time that you spent listening to us on this issue. I just want to say that House File 128, Section 5 of that is not compromise language. I want to make that very clear. And I'm going to turn it over to Paul Copeland, our area sales director, who's going to tell you why that is not a compromise.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Paul Copeland for Waste Management. I'm the area sales director. I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to talk about this and why we oppose it. One of the major reasons for opposing it is our company, we spend a lot of time, we spend a lot of effort talking about antitrust and collusion and the appearance of speaking with another member of another trash hauling company. Even the appearance of it in our company is considered wrong. You're not allowed to do it. There's online training on an annual basis. It's just something we don't do because, number one, the appearance of it is the biggest piece. You don't have to be guilty of it to be accused of it. Okay? The section of five, it allows for discussion of rates among haulers. That's wrong. It's wrong for the citizens. It's wrong for the company. It's wrong for the city. So we welcome competition. We're a large company. We have a large bullseye on us. We lose business. We lose business just like small companies. I can use Hastings for an example. We lost it last January, February, somewhere in that time frame, December. Anyways, we lost that to one of these eight medium-sized haulers. Northfield, Minnesota, again, we lost it to a medium-sized hauler. Waste Management Minnesota, we have to be responsible for our own money. Okay, that's a big deal. You know, the large companies and small companies, there's not a big difference. We have to make money. We have to secure money. We have to secure our investments for our shareholders. This is how competition works. We lose business, then we gain business. If it passes, as a company, we're going to have a difficulty participating in it because of the antitrust and collusion. We work hard for our business. We worked 20 years to gain many of these pieces of business. We've had them for more than 20 years. I can't think of any other business in the state of Minnesota where you're guaranteed anything. You're not guaranteed a customer day in and day out. Grocery stores, hardware stores, contractors, trash haulers. You earn this business every day you're out there. And that's what we're asking the committee to consider.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And I'm not going to go off my list anymore because I'm not sure who's still around, but I see Mr. Burns is here and others that desire to testify, and then we'll take some questions from members of the committee. Yep. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is John Burns, and I represent Republic Services. We're also known as Allied Waste, and a few of our trucks and bins still say BFI. And with me, not at the table, but is Ray Donnelly. And out of respect for the committee's time, Ray had a prepared statement to read. I'm just going to summarize it real quick because I think our points are pretty concise. I do want to say that Ray's one of our sales managers. He's not a lobbyist, first time at the Capitol. He's had a chance to watch some of the floor debate and has been learning a lot. And the reason he's here is to talk about what we are as a company, what our values are, the fact that he really enjoys being one of the team, that we take care of our employees, that we do our best to meet the goals of recycling and all those sorts of things that we do, and that he's a regular Minnesotan. You know, went to Burnsville High School, went to Mankato State. He's a sales guy. And I think it's important to understand that because we are a Fortune 500 company. That's true. But there are 450 Minnesota families who depend on good jobs through Republic. And we're proud of that. And all we want to do is compete. We just want a fair shot. We want a fair shot to bid. And so I'm going to detail three concerns, and I'll do it very concisely, and just throw out a resolution that the committee may want to look at. All of these come down to Section 5. That was the new section that was added. Originally, we didn't have a problem with the bill. We were actually neutral on it. We don't get involved in organized collection for or against. We let cities do their thing. The first issue of Section 5 is it allows for a closed bid, and without an open bid, customers are just going to pay more. If the city proceeds to go to organized collection, the city is taking away the residents' ability to choose their own hauler and essentially choose their own price. And we feel that if a city does make that choice, they have a high responsibility to make sure they get the best price, the lowest price for the consumer. And that is why we believe Section 5 with a closed bid is not going to get a good price. Second, Section 5 locks out non-incumbent haulers for up to 7 years. The vast majority of these haulers who are going to be locked out are not going to be big companies like my company. They're going to be small haulers. And even more so, folks who are going to be locked out are going to be two guys who buy a truck and want to start hauling in that city. They can't get in for 7 years. It'll limit city councils and who they can choose as their hauler because it's going to be limited to just the incumbents. And finally, Section 5 allows incumbent haulers to collaborate, it's in the statute, and to fix the price for waste hauling. Now, the current state law does have an exception and allows an exception for antitrust. However, this exception has never been tested in the courts, and it's never been upheld. We have concern that the current law, not even this bill, might not be upheld. We believe that Section 5 goes further into the gray and maybe even into an area where there's illegal antitrust violations. It allows your competitors, if a company like Republic chooses not to participate in this scheme or collaboration, our market share gets cut up and distributed to the other ones, to our competitors, and we have strong concerns about that. In conclusion, we believe the best policy is to have open bids, to prohibit price fixing, and to allow any hauler, including our competitors, to offer a bid. City councils can choose a hauler or a consortium. They do not have to choose one hauler. They can choose a consortium based on who can offer the best service, the best price, as well as other factors like a company's environmental record. If you are an incumbent hauler and you don't want to lose business, join with your others and make a bid, but make that an open bid. It's one thing to allow incumbent haulers a first shot at negotiating with the city. It's quite another for a city to allow a closed bid, price fixing, and then guarantee profits for a private sector business for up to 7 years. Now, that's what our position is. We have two compromises we've offered. They've been rejected up until now, and it's just to delete all that language. It's lines 3.7 to 3.11, and I understand the other side isn't interested in that. So we have another compromise, and it's just to do one thing, change one word, change it from 3 to 7 years to 3 to 5 years. I don't even think the other haulers would come along with us on that compromise, but that if that were to happen, if that one word were to change, and the initial term instead of going up to five would be only up to, up to seven would up to five, we would withdraw our opposition. I probably have gone on longer than you expected, Mr. Chair. Thank you for a chance to testify, and I want to thank the offer for listening to us, and I'd be happy to answer any questions if you have them.
I'm just glad you were concise, Mr. it's good to have you back, John. Gentlemen, next up, the only thing I'd ask is, at this point, quite frankly, I think I've heard both sides in terms of the arguments that they're, but anything that you have that's new or different, please feel free to add that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Chanan Pafe. I'm the controller for Advanced Disposal, formerly Vueler. And I wanted to say we as a company, we employ 166 Minnesotans. And we are mostly concentrated in the Eastern Metropolitan Area and the Greater Minnesota. And we are here to speak against the House Fire 128 because of its uncompetitive nature. Whether you are in whatever state you are, or whatever place you are, you know that any contract that is going in for a period of 7 years is a very uncompetitive contract. And for a single hauler to be given that advantage, it doesn't play well to any community, especially in a dynamic community like ours, Minnesotans. So, depending on the long-term agreements in the marketplace does not offer the best solution for the business or families, and I urge you to vote against File 128 so that through hard work and healthy competitions, companies like mine and individuals in Minnesota can have a better options in life and in the trash.
Thank you. And welcome.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Peter Larson, Larkin Hoffman Law Firm. I'm also here for Advanced Disposal. I just had a couple points to make, and I'll be brief. You heard mentioned that we're actually a relatively small business in Minnesota. We have less than 200 employees here. This discussion started in the Senate, and we were neutral on the bill. There was an amendment proposed that's similar to what you see as Section 5 that we received just before a hearing, and we were told that the language meant that there would be a transition contract to be put in place, and it was intended to be 3 years. We remained neutral because while we are unhappy with what's even called in statute the uncompetitive conduct protection, we understood that we're an incumbent. I called my client, we talked about the amendment, and the response I got back was, well, you know, sometimes we're in the incumbent, sometimes we're not. If it's going to be 3 years, it's something we can be neutral on. It was later explained to us that the explanation we got was wrong. It was at least 3 years. So then there was a provision put in that it would be 3 to 7 years. Talked with my client again. The message that came back is we just can't stand by and let that happen. We have to put our feelings on the table. Having a 7-year contract with incumbent haulers, with exclusive negotiations, with protections against antitrust and other sorts of consumer protection laws in place, was something that we as an industry or as a company thought it just violated the way we believe the industry should be run. So we've been very clear that while we don't like, again, the statute actually calls it anti-competitive conduct protection, it was okay with us in order to provide a transition. And as Mr. Burns said, we'd be very happy if you recognized that a 7-year contract is not a transition, it's a new contract negotiated by incumbent haulers with full protection on all the consumer protection laws that have been put in place in Minnesota. All of those protections are there for a reason, and they're waived for these purposes, and we think that's incorrect. So thank you, Mr. Chair, and we'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. First off, is there anyone else who desires to testify? As far as questions from... Welcome. If you just identify yourself for the record.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. My name is Michael Lindsay. I am a partner at the law firm of Dorsey and Whitney, and I am here speaking on behalf of Randy Sanitation. I've been asked to come here because a letter provided to the committee in advance of the hearing indicated that the opponents of the legislation were going to raise antitrust concerns. In my practice, I have worked in the field of antitrust for the last 25 years. I am the chair of the antitrust practice group at my firm. I have taught antitrust for every second year for the last 20 years at Hamline University Law School and the University of St. Thomas Law School, and I've also been asked to teach at the other two law schools. This is a field that I know something about. The legislation that we are talking about, the antitrust laws are designed to regulate private conduct, private actors. When I heard the waste management spokesman say that their firm has a compliance program to make sure that their employees comply with antitrust laws, I applaud that. I've worked on such programs. I've designed such programs. I've given antitrust compliance presentations. That's great. But that's not what this legislation is about. This legislation is about regulating the way municipalities will purchase. It is not about private agreements with private actors. And in fact, it was interesting to listen to the waste management spokesman say that they don't want to talk with any other waste haulers because of antitrust concerns. But as I understand it, waste management is involved in a consortium in Vadnais Heights with another waste hauler, which kind of suggests there was some talking. Now, there's nothing wrong with that. They were engaged in a legitimate joint venture, and antitrust law says that there are circumstances where that's fine. And the Republic spokesman kind of confirmed this when he said that a municipality can choose a consortium. Well, you know, again, that means there are people who are talking together for legitimate purposes. There's been some suggestion in the pre-hearing correspondence that perhaps there's a violation of federal antitrust law here. Well, federal antitrust law very clearly indicates that states can choose to regulate economic activities in a way that is inconsistent with federal antitrust law as long as two requirements are met. One is that it be a clearly articulated state policy. This legislation will obviously satisfy that. The second actually doesn't apply. That's the active supervision prong of the test, and it doesn't apply because we're dealing with municipalities here rather than purely private actors. There's also a suggestion in some of the correspondence that the state legislature cannot waive compliance with the antitrust laws. But first of all, that's not what the statute is trying to do. It's, again, regulating how municipalities will go about purchasing. And second, the legislature can either explicitly or implicitly create an exemption or some kind of carve-out to any existing statute. If the legislature couldn't do that, you could never repeal a previously existing law. Finally, the idea that any of the municipalities need to have concerns about antitrust laws, at least the federal antitrust laws, ignores the fact that there's an explicit statutory provision for providing for exemption from damages actions for municipalities who are accused of violating antitrust laws. That's all I have. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Benzie. Is there anyone else who desires to testify? Seeing none, we have one person on the list, member-wise, Representative Schoen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if the waste management gentleman was still here, I'd appreciate if he'd come up and answer a question. And, Mr. Chair, while he's walking up, in the interest of time, I'll ask him, you said that you would have difficulty participating. Could you please enlighten me why?
Mr. Chair, member of this committee, how we'd have difficulty doing it, whether it be legal, it's against our company policy.
Okay, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative.
Sir, and just to point out, so you pointed out right and wrong, and I kind of want to mention right and wrong. Waste management came down to my district and went around Cottage Grove and St. Paul Park outside of the regulations going door-to-door soliciting information. You lost your license suspended in St. Paul Park for a week. Is that correct? I mean, was that right or wrong?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that's not why we were suspended in there.
Okay, so there was issues there, Mr. Chair. The bottom line is you came up and talked about right or wrong, and certainly we've had some right or wrong issues with your service down in my district. And I'm going to tell you what we don't have problems with is my local hauler. That's headquartered in my district, and I appreciate what they do, and I just want to make that very clear. Thank you.
Sir, any other comment?
No, you're welcome. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, you're welcome to choose any hall you wish. We are a local corporation. We're Waste Management of Minnesota. As in a subscription market, we compete on a day-to-day, a month-to-month basis. So do the mid-sized haulers and small haulers. Absolutely.
Thank you. And thank you, Representative Schoen. Are there other questions or concerns? Representative Slocum then renews her motion that House File 128 be recommended pass and refer to the General Register. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you to everyone again for your patience. Chair's prerogative. This is going to be one, Representative Slocum. If it passed 66-0, I think, in the House or in the Senate today.
66-0 on the floor of the Senate.
And
today.
Just for my own, so I feel better about myself, this is one that I have some concerns about. It may not be antitrust per se, but locking in contracts is a concern. And it's one that I suspect that if there are problems, that folks will rush back here to this very committee and raise those concerns. So while I hope that this works out wonderfully, I would caution all those involved that if it doesn't work out so well, or if service levels drop, or if prices spiral, I suspect we're going to be back here discussing this again. And I just wanted to add 45 seconds on that. To make sure that those comments were not left unsaid. Again, thank you to everybody for your patience in being here for this bill. Representative Nelson, if you'll approach members as he's doing that, we've got the P30 amendment to House File 746. Before that comes up, the P30 amendment is a possible amendment to the liquor omnibus bill. We're placing it before the committee so that we respect the committee process. You'll recall that the St. Paul had an exception to the 60-40 arrangement that they offered. Minneapolis then came to us. They asked that this amendment be drafted and for consideration. And with that, unless there's questions about it, we'll lay it over for possible inclusion in the liquor omnibus bill. Are there any questions? We do have folks here to answer those. Representative Hoppe?
Mr. Chair, I'm all in favor of the amendment. I don't have any questions about it, but if there's anybody here that has experience with the 3-2 system, we do have a couple of questions that aren't relevant to the amendment. So Representative Tice has a couple of questions that she could take offline if somebody wants to chat with her as we move on to the next subject here.
Very good. And who's ever here to answer questions? If you could just raise your hand. If members have individual questions that we don't need to use the committee hearing time, you found Ms. Lesh to share questions with. With that, Representative Nelson is before us with House File 1765. The chair will move that House File 1765 be recommended, passed, and referred to the Committee on Taxes. There is an A13-050 amendment. That is an author's amendment. Is that correct, Representative Nelson?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
The chair then will move that author's amendment. All in favor of the author's amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, that motion carries. Representative Nelson, then to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and figure out where I'm at. I almost said Mr. Speaker, but thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 1765 is to require labor peace agreements between infrastructure projects, developers, and unions that represent workers in the hospitality industry when taxpayer funds are put at risk as part of project financing. The concept of labor peace is not new in the state or to this legislature. In the past, when the state has made investments in private development that involves the creation of server jobs or hotel worker jobs, the state has made sure that there will not be economic disruption on the project. It has done this by ensuring that a labor peace agreement has been in place as part of the development before going forward with the public subsidy. Labor peace agreements are essentially a contract or an agreement between the property developers and the managers and the hospitality unions. The agreement lays out an orderly process by which workers can learn about labor unions and choose whether or not to wish to join the union, and the agreement prevents the unions from staging pickets, economic boycotts, and other things that can disrupt the construction or the operation of the development. In return, management remains neutral in the conversation between union members and the workers. The unions are within their rights to strike, to picket, to boycott project, as a means of forcing management to recognize the workers or that workers may wish to join a union. However, that when we invest taxpayer dollars and we have a certain economic, we have to be certain that economic disruptions don't put taxpayer money at risk. This is why labor peace has been and should be a required part of publicly financed hospitality infrastructure projects. Labor peace agreements are commonplace in the hospitality industry, and I don't think the handout got it sent out that lists a bunch of hotels, and there's a map on the back. But it's commonplace in the hospitality industry in every major hotel chain throughout the country, and in cities throughout the country, have signed agreements with Unite Here, the union, to put in place an orderly process for workers to learn about and decide whether they wish to join the union. In Minnesota, Unite Here union has signed agreements with the Twins, the Vikings, the City of Minneapolis for the Excel Arena, and the St. Paul Saints, the Metropolitan Airport Commission, and numerous hotel projects, including the new Radisson Blue that is open shortly at the Mall of America. Also, when the Republican National Convention came to town in 2008, the RNC signed a general short-term labor peace agreement with local labor to avoid labor strife and pickets at their events. There were no labor pickets or labor disruptions at any of the events held at any facilities throughout the metro area. Public bodies across the country, including the state of Minnesota, have found these agreements useful to ensure that plans for development and construction go forward in an orderly fashion. Also, the city of Minneapolis presently has a labor peace ordinance. Minneapolis refuses to invest in hotel projects unless there's an agreement between the union and the developer. The state of New York, Miami-Dade County, Prince George's County, Cook County, and the cities of Pittsburgh, San Francisco, Los Angeles, Miami, Baltimore, and Washington, D.C. have labor peace requirements on their books. We believe the state of Maryland is also considering legislation similar to this year. In those instances where developers of projects with state or local funding have declined to have an agreement, state or local entities have added labor peace language as a condition of public subsidy. In 2008, as part of the of that round of Mall of America public subsidy, the legislature included a labor peace requirement that facilitated the agreement on the Radisson Blue property. For those members who voted in favor of the 2008 tax bill, you have already voted for labor peace. And note, Governor Plenty signed that into law. Without a labor peace agreement in place, once construction is finished and the hotel is up and running, the state's proprietary interest, it's easy for me to say, and the public's investment could be compromised. There could be labor dispute on the site. The operator could prevent workers from ruling about the union, including restricting access and communication despite millions of dollars of public subsidies and those taxpayers' dollars that are trying to organize on the site, being spent on the site. Management can intimidate or fire workers who ask for union membership to ensure fair wages, better working conditions, or health benefits. While it is not the primary goal of this legislation, it is certainly a desirable outcome that workers on sites with public investment have jobs with a fair working condition, fair pay for the work they do, and while servers' jobs may look easy, the work required by these people in these jobs is often physically demanding. For example, women in housekeeping jobs experience a very high rate of injury, so Unite Here works with both the employers and the employees to ensure that workplace standards are met and the pay is commensurate with the work to be done. In closing, while in the past the legislature has required labor peace as part of individual projects, it's smarter to have a law in the books that sets an expectation that protecting taxpayer interests. Rather than reacting to projects, let's be proactive and set a reasonable requirement by putting labor peace into law. And members, the amendment that we put on at the last hearing, there were some questions, and there were some questions about what it covered, and maybe the scope was a little farther afield than what that we all wanted, and so the amendment that we adopted tightens that back to just the hospitality industry and kind of makes it a little easier to read and understand, and that's what the amendment does. It's okay. So I'll stand for any questions.
Thank you, Representative Nelson, and I do think it bears mentioning that because it's a pretty significant amendment. There was at least some of us that were reading the original language as possible requiring a union as opposed to what a labor peace agreement is supposed to be, which is just saying there's not going to be interference with whatever the employees decide to do. And then I know that there was some relative to the size of the project, the number of employees, and then I think you kick out the St. Thomas Academy out of the Classic Suburban Conference too, if I remember right.
I don't remember that being in the amendment, but maybe it was. I worked.
I'm pretty sure it's page three. We'll review it closely,
Mr. Chair.
And welcome to the committee. I've got a couple folks on the list that wanted to testify, Mr. Metcalf or Mr. Quillis. Is there anyone that desires to be heard?
Mr. Metcalf is here to help me answer questions if they get into a legal matter that I'm not sure about.
Sounds good. And we do have Mr. Quillis, you coming on down? Look at the speed, ladies and gentlemen, at 10 o'clock.
And
at
as
night.
He comes down, Mr. Speaker or Mr. Chair, there should have been a letter from the Graves Hospitality that was in the packet.
It's been handed out.
Okay.
Thank
Mr.
you.
Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Tony Quillis. I'm representing Hospitality Minnesota, which is the umbrella organization for the Minnesota Restaurant Association, Minnesota Resorts and Campgrounds, and the Minnesota Lodging Association. Just wanted to bring a couple of points of concern to the hospitality industry. Mr. Chairman, I think Representative Nelson has made one of my points for me that before this now amendment or bill in front of you, it seemed to be things were working just fine for labor peace agreements, as he pointed out at the Radisson Blue and a couple of other places. So we were questioning why we needed to do that. And as you can see, I understand the concern for large expansions and a large public investment in a number of projects throughout the Twin Cities. But this bill before you, and I'll get into Representative Nelson had made a couple of changes for it, and I appreciate him making those for them and an earlier conversation that we had today. This expands to not just cities of the first class, but counties that have cities of the first class. So we're going to be talking about Hennepin County, Ramsey, St. Louis County, and Olmsted County. So those are the four that will be affected by this, number one. So we think that's a big expansion of these agreements Mr. Chairman. Number two, it's not just bonding or TIF projects. If you go through and look, starting between 1.16 and down to 1.23 on the amendment, it's anything that has to do with a TIF. It's a loan. It's a lease. It's a project tax abatement, deferral, a credit. It's any city or county or local governmental unit that donates, sells, leases personal property or any infrastructure in there. And originally our concern was is that would it be any road easement, any piece or parcel of a land that we were concerned about. But Representative Nelson and the advocates inserted some language on 3.10 to 3.11, and we thank him for doing that, that put $1 million cap on that. But in St. Louis County, where Representative Anzell's from, we might be able to stay underneath that $1 million cap. But in Hennepin and Ramsey County, any sort of donation or sell of land in Hennepin and Ramsey County, it's pretty easy to get over that $1 million cap. So, Mr. Chairman, that's just a couple of the concerns. Also wanted to point out that when we define local government on 2.18 to 2.19, that includes cities, counties, and any development authority under 469. Well, 469 includes housing redevelopment authorities, port authorities, city development districts, economic development districts, TIF, we talked about TIFs, job zones, enterprise zones, any biotechnology or health science industry zones. So if any of those are contained in any of those four counties I previously mentioned, those would be included in there, Mr. Chairman. And we think two last points. Number one, we think this would encourage development outside Hennepin in Ramsey counties. If you've gone through and done your due diligence and decided you want to locate a hotel project, right now, if I could locate it just outside of Hennepin County in Burnsville or in Dakota County or in Wright County or Carver County, that would be a pretty easy decision for me, I think, to go through, or in Anoka County for that matter, to locate just outside of Hennepin County or Ramsey County. If I was looking in the eastern suburbs, I would locate probably just in Washington County rather than in Ramsey County. And finally, Mr. Chairman, I think it takes away any option that any city or county might have to think about doing this on a project-by-project basis. This would just kind of go through and mandate that we go through. Mr. Chairman, thank you for the time. I know it's late. We've all been here a long time, and I appreciate you allowing me to comment on this.
Thank you, Mr. Quillis. Representative Sanders, you're on the list.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a couple of questions, but not to the merit of the bill, but the process that we're under here. And I just want to make sure that I have this correct. The bill was introduced after first deadline and was we waived Rule 2.03 in rules. Later that day, we had to delete all in GovOps, and then that language was added in Ways and Means to the omnibus tax bill. Tonight, this language is in front of us, which we had a delete all for, and so the language has changed again. The omnibus tax bill is up before the body tomorrow, and I've noticed there is also an amendment that deals with this provision in the omnibus tax bill. I guess my question to either you, Chair Nelson, or you, Chair Atkins, is the amendment we're going to see tomorrow the same language as the amendment that we just adopted?
Representative Sanders, right down to the semicolon. It's precise. I insisted that it be filed ahead of time to meet the noon deadline for the tax bill being up tomorrow so that nobody was caught by surprise. So it's literally the very exact same language.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that. I'll just say, Mr. Chair and Representative Nelson, it's cause for concern that a bill that's introduced after deadline has gone through three different changes in substance in a week. The language is already added into an omnibus bill that we're going to be discussing tomorrow on the body. We're changing the language again tonight, changing the, you know, substituting this language then in tomorrow. And I guess the question, maybe more rhetorical, is what's the rush? We have all of next session if we can't get this through in time. And it begs the question, do we have this right? You know, if we've had to go through three language changes in 1 week, is this language right? Are we sure that this is right? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Sanders. Representative Swidzinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Nelson, just kind of looking at line 119, looking at the TIF district. So is there any sort of a clawback? So say they did a project where a TIF was started maybe 3 years ago, 4 years ago, 5 years ago, and then there was a project being placed on that or in that or using that same system. Would you have to enter into that at this time, or would a TIF district have to get created now, and then you would be under this rule, or would you be clawed back, and if you just happen to have one and you happen to join in, you're under this law, or is there... How does that process work?
And if you, Representative Nelson, if you'd like to have Mr. Metcalf...
I'm looking over to try and phone a friend, and I'm trying to get...
And just for planning purposes this evening, I've got Representatives Zellers and Anderson and Hortman. I'm hoping to conclude the meeting by 10:30. I know that members have had a very long day, so I appreciate your willingness to do this at this late... and I'm sorry, Representative Loon, you raised your hand as well. Sir, welcome. Can you answer? Identify yourself for the record and answer the question for Representative.
My name is Robert Metcalf. I'm an attorney for the firm of Metcalf, Casper, Engdahl, and Lazarus, and my practice consists entirely of representing labor unions in the state of Minnesota and other upper Midwest states. I represent a number of unions, not just in the hospitality industry.
If you want to repeat your question,
Yes,
And maybe Mr. Reese or Mr. Trevor, Mr. Oliver could help us. He helped draft the language, and I believe the intent was existing projects, we're not clawing back into them, but if you're building a new building in a TIF district, that would be covered. That's my understanding.
Was that your question, Representative Swidzinski?
Well,
just to not claw back existing projects?
Well, Mr. Chair, that's kind of, but you know, looking at, you know, we have cities coming to us all the time looking to start a TIF or do some sort of a TIF project, but also have existing TIFs that have been approved in prior years. You know, this would make a difference for cities potential, but you know, also, you know, whether they ever wanted to get involved. So if they were just talking about a new building and an old TIF, but this would happen to be part of it, maybe the decisions would have made differently. Where that's how I'm talking about a clawback.
And Mr. Chair,
Representative Nelson.
Mr. Metcalf just whispered on my ear, in line 3.17H says nothing in this section denies any financial assistance approved prior to August 1st, 2013. So if it's a project that's been approved before when the bill goes into effect, those projects wouldn't be covered under with requiring a project, not a project, a
so are we talking
labor peace agreement. So if it's a project starting after that, it would be covered.
It would be the project with the financial assistance approved after August 1st.
Anyone else? Sean? Johnson?
I'm listening to you. I absolutely have nothing.
Thank you, Representative Swidzinski, for that point. Next up, I have Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Nelson, can you tell me how do these peace labor agreements work? What would you typically find in a peace labor agreement? What does the owner have to provide to the labor union and vice versa? I understand the labor union says, hey, we're not going to picket or strike or anything like that, but what does the owner have to, what do they typically have as part of their end of the bargain?
Representative Nelson, briefly.
What the owner, the operator of the facility would require, would give is the ability of the union to talk to the workers and not prevent them through many of the legal means that they do, and sometimes they're very onerous means of trying to prevent organizing to go on. In exchange for that, the union gives up the right to be able to do the things that they do, and some of those are very onerous, and that's the idea, is to create tension there to get them to talk to them. So they're giving up their right to do the stuff that they do to let us talk to these people, and that's all that the operator would have to do. It's not guaranteeing that they're going to get a contract or agreement. Just be able to talk to them and try and convince them that a union would be good for them.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Nelson, current law already bans operators from doing that. So I'm wondering, what are we gaining from having these peace agreements in place? And also, can you tell me, kind of on the vein of what Representative Swazinski put in place, would I live in Hennepin County, we've got the Twins Stadium. Are you saying that any like restaurant in Hennepin County, like say for example Plymouth, would they now fall under this? So if there is a restaurant built in Plymouth, would they now have to do this because, you know, we're part of the Twin Stadium taxing district, we're the ones that we're putting up the money for it. Would any restaurant then in Hennepin County or hotel in Hennepin County now fall under this?
Representative Nelson.
No, if they're not receiving any financial assistance from the state, because they're paying the tax, the sales tax, but they're not getting assistance from the state, so no, they would not be required.
So, Representative Anderson. Chair and Representative Nelson, to be clear, you're not viewing like the Twin Stadium or even the Viking Stadium as being a financial benefit to these. It doesn't extend out to those communities at all.
Representative Nelson?
No.
Representative Zellers?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Representative Nelson, is your bill moving anywhere in the Senate?
Representative Nelson?
I'm not aware where it's moving in the Senate, no.
Representative Zellers?
Representative Nelson, do you have a co-author for the bill that you introduced days ago in the Senate?
Currently, no.
Representative Nelson? Representative Hortman?
Mr. Chairman?
I was done with you, Representative Zellers.
Well, I'll be done in a second, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, I was afraid of that.
Mr. Chairman and
finish?
Representative Nelson, it's too bad, and I say this with all due respect to Representative Manzel, because I think he's introduced this amendment at some point, too, as well, but this is an embarrassment to the process in this committee. And I'm not ashamed of you or Representative Atkins for having to do this, but it's a damn shame for your leadership to do this to you right now at 10 o'clock at night for something that hasn't had a snowball's chance in hell in passing in the Senate and wasting all these good people's time.
Well, we were supposed to hear for that liquor amendment, Representative Zellers. That one's...
they were here for the last one.
But this is... And Representative Zellers, I could probably point you when a fellow I know was speaker last time around, we had a bunch of bills moving through that didn't have Senate authors for a period of time, but I wouldn't do that at 10 o'clock at night. Representative Hortman and then Representative Loon and Hoppy, and then we're going to vote. So Representative Hortman?
Pass.
Nice. Representative Hoppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Nelson. Maybe you covered this earlier, but I believe it's only the city of Minneapolis that currently has this in place in the state, and I'm just wondering, why are we doing this? Is it necessary? I mean, what's broken?
Representative Nelson.
Representative Hoppe, Mr. Chair, currently Minneapolis has an ordinance, a citywide ordinance. The city of St. Paul does this as a matter of course on most of their large projects that they do. Okay. Other cities have done this in the past that with large projects. I don't know which other ones have, but I know other ones. I know the Bloomington has done that with the Mall of America. We've had labor peace agreements on projects there. So it's something that we're trying to protect our interests as a state. If we're going to invest money in projects, if we're going to invest money in these things, we're trying to protect our financial interests that are in these projects to make sure that they're not disrupted, they go forward and get done in a timely fashion. And that protects our investment in those projects.
Representative Hoppe.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I will be brief. And Representative Nelson, I have no problems with the city of Minneapolis or the city of St. Paul or the current system. I'm fine with it if this is what gets negotiated. I'm not entirely convinced. I'm not convinced that we need to do this. And I think it was Representative Swazinski that said it earlier. Maybe it's something we want to work on in the interim and continue to think on a little more. I hate to give him credit. He's practically still a freshman, but I think it might be worth hanging on to and just working on it in the interim.
You mean he's not a freshman?
Who?
The last one on the list, and then we've got a testifier yet, Representative Loon.
Well, thanks, Mr. Chair. And I know the League wants to testify, so I think in the interest of time, we'll just hear from them. But I just associate myself with Representative Zeller's comments. The process stinks. We're wasting people's time. And I look forward to hearing the testimony from the League of Cities.
Okay. Come on down.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Member Chairman. Patrick Hines with the League of Minnesota Cities.
Mr. Chairman, while they're coming down, I like Representative Hoppe's comments.
Well, they're coming down.
He was feeling left out.
Okay, thank you, Representative Davids. Mr. Hines.
Thank you, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The League does not have a formal position on the bill or labor peace agreements, but we have circulated the various amendments to our member cities and have received quite a few comments and questions from the cities about how the bill would work if it was implemented. I would note that the most recent amendment did address a number of the concerns, and I think the general concern is the breadth and the scope of the bill. It is true there have been successful labor peace agreements on hotel and stadium projects in Minneapolis and other cities. These have generally been larger projects, and there was a lot of concern that the bill would apply to smaller projects or small food and beverage establishments that were adjacent to a hotel. I note that that adjacent language has been removed. I think that's a positive change. I think the $1 million floor that was added in this new amendment is a positive change. I think there are still some concerns cities have. I note the Minneapolis ordinance, for example, does not require the city to enter into a labor peace agreement. It requires the city to do a case-by-case analysis to determine whether their exposure to risk is significant enough to merit a labor peace agreement. The Minneapolis ordinance and other ordinances in cities across the nation also have some exceptions for small businesses that have fewer than 15 employees. I will wrap it up quickly and say two other things. The reference to infrastructure, we think the language, if you want to include infrastructure as a triggering mechanism, I think the language should be tightened to make sure it's infrastructure that's specifically funded for that project. I also think that there's should be a process in place if the union and the developer cannot agree on a labor peace agreement language. There should be a process to resolve that so the process can go forward.
Thank you, Mr. Hines. Next up, you got 30 seconds.
Mr. Chairman, members, Bill Griffith representing Mall of America. Representative Nelson knows the experience there. We worked on that labor peace provision for many, many months. At some point, it almost jeopardized the project. My concern is not that. My concern is that this language, as the last testifier pointed out, is still very broad. It was my understanding it was intended to help hotels in certain locations with certain subsidies, and it's now morphed into something much broader that affects other venues. I think at a time when we don't see project financing coming back in any kind of strength, it's a difficult thing to work through, and investors just quietly go away. They go to other places, and it makes it a high bar. So I just wanted you to have that experience, and probably the most recent example.
Thank and that kind of succinctness. If everybody could testify like this and do that on the floor, we'd be done by 10 o'clock in the morning each day.
Speaking of the bar,
yes. Representative Nelson renews his motion that House File 1765 as amended be recommended pass and referred to General Register. I'm sorry, referred to taxes. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Nelson. With that, folks, we stand adjourned. Thank you all again for your time.